with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Outside, we've had some dodgy internet issues thus far today, but we'll keep our fingers crossed, one hand in the air, and our tongue held just right. I don't know, maybe put on the aluminum foil hat and hope that we get through 3 hours of conversation radio tonight. Not get through. I mean, this isn't like the way Mark Twain described Sundays in The Diary of Adam and Eve. You know, Sunday, pull through. No, it's just, well, the internet is the internet. At least around here, the internet is the mess that the internet can be. So, you know, there you are. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. A little something we like to call conversation radio. And it's Titanic Tuesday. Titanic Tuesday, named, of course, for the Titanic wits, the Titanic intellects of the right wing. Named, of course, after, in honor, is honor the right word? Of a local right-wing broadcaster who once explained to his knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing following that there are fossilized shellfish in the rock strata of almost level West Bicod, Virginia, because of the movement of the Titanic plates. Not to mention the Titanic gravy boat, the Titanic tureen, the Titanic... Never mind. You get the idea. We are listener-funded here, Conversation Radio is, and based on what the amount we were able to raise last night, thank you everybody for how much you did help. We find ourselves this evening trying to raise $265. We know, you know, math on the fly. Me, that's a problem. $265 to draw even with where we need to be here as we move into the second half of the month of June. So, the PayPal button works. And by the way, a reminder based on a note we got last night, there is a recurring contribution function on the website now, and it'll be curious to see A, if it works, and if it does, that way maybe you don't have to constantly be reminded by me, and you can just set up and go with what you can go with. So if you want to try that, you're more than welcome. If you still prefer to use the mail service, the address, of course, is The Horn, 1038 North Eisenhower Drive, PMB 318, Beckley, West Virginia, 25801. And do please remember, checks or money orders should not be paid to Bob Kincaid, but should be made payable to Head On Communications, The Horn, or something along those lines, because I don't see it. I don't touch him. That's where Boss Man Wayne comes in his frequent visits to the mailbox, which he likes to, much prefers to see mail as opposed to nothing but a sort of dry, dusty echo when he opens the little box door. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. Yeah, it is Tuesday. It is the 18th day of June, 2013. And let's start with this. Let's start with this one. I love it when these stories sort of come together and join from seemingly disparate areas. Maybe this is the that's the case with this. Maybe it's not. But over on my Facebook page, which you are welcome to friend up with if you wish, by Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, on Facebook. We've got there are folks who post just fascinating stuff over there, and I noticed our buddy Beth down in Texas posted this one, and I kind of went, what? It's a Salon article, and it's by Alex Seitzwald, and it opens as, well, thusly, how do you make abortion funny? That was a key question mulled at a major conservative gathering Friday on how to make social conservatism appealing to young people after an election where Republicans got trounced in the battle for millennial voters who are moving even further and further away from the Christian right on marriage and other issues. Abortion has to be made funny, the thinking goes, because funny sells on social media, and that's where one goes to court young people. Students for Life President Kristen Hawkins said at a breakout panel at the Faith and Freedom Coalition Conference in Washington, she said,
you can engage with sarcasm. It's hard with the abortion issue, but you have to. Unfortunately, we have to because this is the generation that we've been dealt.
Really? Dealt? Let me see if I understand that correctly. You assault women's reproductive rights with the generation you have, not the generation you wish you had?
Well, absolutely. It would be ever so much easier if we had Carrie Nation's generation. You know, they used hatchets.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. Funny. But okay, you'll see where I'm going. I know you will. Funny abortion. We got that? Funny abortion. Okay. So thus we find ourselves dealing with Representative Michael Burgess Ripiglican of Texas. Oh dear. You know this is going to be good. Representative Michael Burgess of Texas is a proponent of the House bill, which I have no doubt will pass, if it hasn't already. It was to be taken up today. I didn't see the follow-up on it. I'm sorry. The House wants to pass a bill that will impose massive restrictions on a woman's right to control the workings of her own body. Which brings us to Representative Michael Burgess, who is another one of those MDs who got bored with the doctrine and decided he wanted to go and do some legislating. This is one of those moments when it's a pity that we're actually a radio instead of a TV show, because I'd love to show women in the audience, and the guys, but mainly the women. I'd love to show them a picture of representing Michael Burgess of Ripiglican of Texas. Because, mercy sakes, and I did, you know, empirically gathered data is always the best data, right? So I called Agnes in here, and I said, honey, see him? Yeah. He's an OBGYN who wants to restrict a woman's right to control the workings of her own body, and he's a member of the House of Representatives, representing Michael Burgess, Ripiglican of Texas. And then I said, sweetheart, how would you like to see that face down there betwixt the stirrups when you're getting your gynecological exam? And well... She smacked me lightly and left the room, muttering various and sundry imprecations. Now, this is a guy who has been to medical school. Of course, so too did right-wing Repiglick and Paul Brown of Georgia go to medical school. That's where he learned what he refers to, remember, as those lies from the pits of hell. You know, science. Well, I apparently tried to teach some science to representing Michael Burgess. Yeah, I agree, Marty. It's a little late for Moran Monday, but it falls nicely into the rubric of Titanic Tuesday. Representing Michael Burgess went to medical school. Well, he got himself a bachelor's degree, and then he went to medicating school. And they teached him how to teach the whale to jump out of its tail. No, I don't know. They teached him how to deal with the lady parts. And so he knows everything there is to know about a fetus, except for science. Except for real stuff. Because he's one of these goobers that is convinced that a fetus can feel pain at 20 weeks. Even without the necessary brain function to be able to comprehend it. And never mind, for the time being, the overarching, larger philosophical debate of how one can know what pleasure is or pain is absent the other. Well, he entered into that debate. He encouraged people, representing Michael Burgess, whom no woman I can imagine or knowing would ever want to see down there betwixt the stirrups. Well, never mind me. Never mind me. Let's let representing Michael Burgess do it for himself.
No question. Gentleman, Dr. Burgess.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well, this is a subject that I do know something about. And I will just tell you, from the delivery of thousands of babies, attending thousands of women during their pregnancy, performance of thousands of sonograms, there's no question in my mind, no question in my mind, that a baby at 20 weeks after conception can feel pain.
There's no question in his mind, but also, actually, no data in his head. He's basing this, you know, I said empirically gathered data is the best data. This is not empirically gathered data. These are just impressions. There's a difference between impressions and opinions and actual fact. And he's saying, well, I done did me a whole bunch of sonograms, and, I believe they feel pain. I do. I believe it. Understanding, of course, that the word believe is the single most dangerous word in the English language. All that fetal pain stuff is nothing if it is not junk science. But anyway, so that's the setup. I've done seen me some babies in the womb, and I know they can feel pain. Because I've seen it, and I believe it, and that settles it. But I'm being unfair. He has what he thinks is some empirical data. Here.
The fact of the matter is, I argued with the chairman because I thought the date was far too late. We should be setting this at 15 weeks, 16 weeks. You watch a sonogram at a 15-week baby, and they have movements that are purposeful. They stroke their face.
Uh-oh. I bet you've even got a pretty good idea of where this is going. I always worry whenever I hear a Repiglick and use the verb stroke. He thinks it's far too late. You know what? We ought to be in there watching them make the babies. And the minute the baby gets done made, we need to take a woman and just put her in a box. You know, kind of the way they used to do with the widows of dead kings. Just kind of keep her in one room and watch every movement, so that in case she turns up pregnant, we'll know that it really was His Highness's baby. What a freaking loser. But wait.
16 weeks. You watch a sonogram at a 15-week baby, and they have movements that are purposeful. They stroke their face. If they're a male baby, they may have their hand between their legs.
What if it's a female baby? Are female babies, do they form in the womb like little Tyrannosaurus Rexes with them little short arms so that they can't reach between their legs? Now, notice the inferential leap he's about to make. We're going to go back, and I'm going to shut up and just let him... This is a man who was taught to be a doctor. Do you get to go to medical school without ever even so much as having a thimble full of coffee in the philosophy department where you learn things like logic? Apparently, wherever Representing Burgess went to medicating school, you do.
They're purposeful. They stroke their face. If they're a male baby, they may have their hand between their legs. I mean, they feel pleasure. Why is it so hard to think that they could feel pain?
Oops. See what he done did there? The random movements of an in utero fetus, what if the fetus touches its little fetus Botox? Or you know, what, how do we know that these are not autonomic or random? But notice, he assumes by inference that because a male baby, not the females, their little precious angel purity babies, little girl babies don't do that nasty stuff. But he infers that because a male fetus's arm will reach between a male fetus's legs, God knows what happens with twins, that means that it's pleasurable. Do you see what a jackanapes this guy is? Oh boy. You guys are off and running. But yeah. The Repiglican mind is a dirty mind. I think we can make that inference more safely than Representing Burgess can make the inference that little boys are down there playing, beat the bishop at 20 weeks. With them little stubby fingers. See, even because remember, we're probably talking about a fundamentalist here too. I mean, he is from Texas and he is a Repiglican, and well, he's white and he's male, and yeah. So, remember that baby he's talking about? These babies they get all worked up about. Every last one of them was conceived with original sin. You remember the doctrine of original sin, right? Eve screwed the pooch in the Garden of Eden, got everybody thrown out on their ass, and everybody's a sinner from then on down. Even in the womb. Conceived in sin and born in iniquity. Charming, aren't they? so that necessarily that baby whose arm through the amniotic fluid, kind of like being in a swimming pool, my arm is a dolphin, hand just kind of goes down there. And I mean, really? What does the male phallus look like at 20 weeks? But yes. Representing Dr. Burgess, wants to eliminate abortion after 15 weeks because baby boys, masturbate in the womb. At 20 weeks, is the full genitourinary system even developed in a fetus? Well, like I said, I love it when stories come together. So there you got some young repig-licking freaks talking about making abortion funny. And here comes Representing Burgess to help him out. Yeah, we got to limit abortion because, well, we'll stop the baby fetuses from masturbating. You can almost see them emerging from the womb, their palms all covered in hair and, half blind from masturbation and all those things. Yeah, right. Dr. John writing in, what? Dude became a doctor so he could watch fetuses masturbate? What the f*** is wrong with these people? A lot, John. A lot. Sex, sex, sex. That's all you're ever on about. Is it too big? Is it too small? Will the girls like it? Do I have a big nose, Mum? I guess score one for the other side. They said they need funny abortion stories, and bang, there's Representing Burgess. Then Darlene writing in, very simple subject line. Ugh. That's what's UGH. Ugh. Darlene writes, I saw a photo of that freak earlier today and thought, what a weird-looking freak. But I didn't know he was also a gynecologist. And I'll do my best by Darlene's expression here. Yuck! He probably got very few patients looking like that, so that's why he jumped to politics. He figured someone out there is stupid enough to elect him to office. Well, it's Texas. So if he can get enough of a critical mass of stupid and stupider to vote for him by riding the I'm going to save the fetuses wave, then, hey, House of Representing, here he comes. But Darlene, just a minor correction, if I may, please. It's not I'm going to save the fetuses. It's I'm going to save the pud-pounding fetuses. We are 24 minutes into the program, and I can almost feel that little spot right in my neck where the Thorazine dart probably should go. Just, oh, all better now. And you forget about Representing Michael Burgess and his fantasies over masturbating fetuses. I can't even take myself seriously when I say masturbating fetuses. What, Edith? I mean, they're really reaching now, aren't they? And I'm sure it's got to be something. Well, what did that sage and poet Jimmy Buffett once sing? Some people say that there's a woman to blame. Some people claim there's a woman to blame. But I know it's the fetus's fault. Okay, Bob, we've got to get through 2 hours and 35 minutes of this. No, it'll be okay. It'll be all right. Marty noting, I prefer my Thorazine orally as opposed to being shot with it, preferably mango-flavored. Have you tried the cherry pomegranate, Marty? It's really good. And so calming. Ah. And the neat thing about the Thorazine darts is the fletching. You can use it when you're sitting there in fly tie in class. Right. Masturbating fetuses. I'm sorry. It's a hell of a note to start the program on, but, well, you know, we got to deal with these people. And by suggestion from Isaac, yes, this does seem a great bumper for representing Burgess, and I thank you. I thank you, Isaac, for sending it along.
When I start making love, I don't just make love, I be stroking. That's what I be doing. I be stroking. I stroke it to the east, and I stroke it to the west, and I stroke it to the woman that I love the best. I be stroking. Let me ask you something. What time of the day do you like to make love? Have you ever made love just before breakfast? Have you ever made love while you watch the Late Late Show? Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever made love on a couch? Well, let me ask you this. Have you ever made love on the back seat of a car? I remember one time I made love on the back seat of a car, and the police came and shined his light on me, and I said, I'm stroking. That's what I'm doing. I be stroking. I stroke it to the east, and I stroke it to the west, and I stroke it to the woman that I love the best. I be stroking. Let me ask you something. How long has it been since you made love? Huh? Did you make love yesterday? Did you make love last week? Did you make love last year? Or maybe it might be that you're planning on making love tonight.
But did you rub one out in the uterus?
When you start making love, you're making hard, long, soft, short, and be stroking.
In 15 weeks.
I be stroking. I stroke it to the east, and I stroke it to the west, and I stroke it to the woman that I love the best. I'll be stroking. Now, when I start making love to my woman, I don't stop until I know she's satisfied. And I can always tell when she gets satisfied, because when she gets satisfied, she started calling my name. She said, Clarence Carter, Clarence Carter, Clarence Carter, Clarence Carter. Ooh, shit, Clarence Carter. The other night, I was stroking my woman, and it got so good to her. You know what she told me? Let me tell you what she told me. She said, stroke it, Clarence Carter, but don't stroke so fast. My stuff ain't tight enough, you can stick it up my throat. I be stroking. I be stroking. I stroke it to the east, and I stroke it to the west, and I stroke it to the woman that I love the best. I be stroking.
you are a bad man. But that's a perfect call. That's just perfect call. Clarence Carter, of course. Clarence Carter, Clarence Carter, Clarence Carter. Yeah. I stroke it in the uterus that is my nest. Oh, for pity's sake. Just had this flash on that, you know, that image in 2001, A Space Odyssey, of the little intergalactic fetus floating around in his little placenta. I feel like there's something awful growing in my brain. Funny abortion. Horse walks into a bar, orders a martini. Bartender says, that'll be $1,000. Comes back a little bit later after the horse has finished his martini and says, you know, we don't get a lot of horses in here. Horse looks at him and says, at $1,000 a martini, I'm not surprised. Where do we go from here? I should have saved that story. I should have, but I didn't. Where's the pity? We'll find something else. Actually, we'll find a lot of something else's. Because, well, boring the right wing ain't. Crazy? Hateful? Weird? Yeah. Now, how about a gun story? How about we go to Utah for it? This is the story of Charles Richard Jennings Jr., who is has like tats all around his neck, his very close cropped hair, sunken cheekbones. Looks like something out of a first person shooter video game. Who wandered into the St. James Catholic Church in Ogden, Utah. Got Catholics in Utah? Who knew? And the priest was doing his magic act. And Charles Richard Jennings Jr. walked up behind his father-in-law and shot him in the back of the head. Because, you know, freedom! Wolverines! He then left the church, ran to a nearby home, stole a truck and a cell phone at gunpoint, and then drove north, but apparently the truck he was in didn't have much in the way of gasoline, so he ran out of gas and then took it on Shank's mares. He was apprehended. And Utah's highway patrol, I'm sorry, Ogden Police Lieutenant Daniel Croyle said, this was a very specific desired target, and action taken by the suspect. But he screwed up. He shot his father-in-law in the back of the head, but his father-in-law did not die. In stable condition and able to talk. Get that. Able to talk after undergoing brain surgery for the bullet wound to the back of his head. And so Charles Richard Jennings is cooling his heels in the Box Elder County Jail, I guess, awaiting legal proceedings. He looks a little like Skeletor. What? I'm not going to be charged with murder? He lived? And I'm going to prison for... Oh, damn! His father-in-law. Yeah, wasn't there a whole debate in Hamlet about dying unshriven? And what a rotten thing that was for Claudius to do to Hamlet's daddy Hamlet. Yeah. Busy night, busy night. Masturbating fetuses. I'm sorry, that just stops me in my tracks. Yeah, I guess we can also play Jackson Brown's Rosie. Well, let's don't. Let's assume for a minute. I don't think we have to assume. Representing Burgess is out there worrying about the masturbating boy babies. Meanwhile, out in Missouri, there's a baby who was already on the ground. Been out and about in the world for 4 months. And prosecutors in St. Charles County, Missouri, have arrested and charged Jessica Lynn Howell with child abuse and murder, because authorities out there say that she sent text messages to her boyfriend, Jordan Lafayette Prince, inviting him. Jesus, I'm gonna bathe in bleach after tonight. Inviting him to come over and have sex with the four-month-old. Even though, and this is one of those journalism moments, even though she knew he had previously been convicted of sexual abuse of a minor. I really don't see how that little factoid fits in the story. St. Charles prosecuting attorney Tom Lomar said in those text messages she suggested and encouraged some unspeakable things. It is very, very disturbing. Jordan Lafayette Prince sexually assaulted the four-month-old and then strangled the four-month-old to death. Ashlyn was the infant. Court documents state Ashlyn was sexually assaulted, causing multiple tears to her anus, a massive laceration to her rectum with massive hematoma in the area of the pelvis. The injuries to her anus and rectum of Ashlyn were sufficient to eventually cause her death even without the strangulation. But representing Burgess is worried about fetus boys masturbating in the womb. And young Repiglicans are trying to figure out a way to make abortion funny. You know what? I don't know, and I'm pretty sure it doesn't. Pretty sure a fetus doesn't feel pain at 15 weeks, but I am goddamn certain that a four-month-old does. But, you know, little Ashlyn was already out and about in the world, and, you know, she's just part of the free market now. We got to worry about the fetuses. Going to ask a hard question here. And I would prefer... I would appreciate your input. Because this is a tough question, or maybe it's not. See, I'd like to take... And this is gross. It's not gross. It's shocking. It's horrifying. I would like to take the autopsy photos of little Ashlyn to represent in Burgess and show him the pictures and ask him if he thinks little four-month-old Ashlyn felt pain. And then I would like to ask him whether it might have been a far, far, far better thing that little Ashlyn had been aborted. Instead of being brought into this world to live for 4 months, to be raped by her mama's boyfriend. I think it's a fair question. Don't you? But you see, we won't ask questions like that of representing Burgess because, you know, civility. When in point of fact, the autopsy photos should be plastered on his ceiling. And every other anti-choice creep in this country should have those photos plastered on their ceilings so that they are the first thing they see when they wake up in the morning and the last thing they see when they close their eyes at night to pray for forgiveness. Yes, that's horrifying. But so too is so much of what the right wing does in and to this country. Bear in mind, another story that Beth sent along. The Texas State Senate today set about to debate and vote on four bills that would reduce women's access in Texas to reproductive health care, drastically reduce their access. And in the course of that debate, they declared that people could not wear T-shirts in the gallery of the Texas State Senate that bore the legend, "My Family Values Women." Orange T-shirts that simply said, "My Family Values Women." The Texas Senate declared such expressions of free speech to be intolerable and banned the T-shirts. Do we get a working idea of where their heads are? And what would the answer be in a place like Texas to the story coming out of Missouri?
Well, we need to execute that feller. He got to die.
And while I'm generally not a proponent of the death penalty, I would be hard-pressed to disagree. But it is still no remedy. No remedy at all. But, you know, fetuses. America. Lee Greenwood. Fetuses. Tough night. Sorry. See if we can move away. You know, like to Alpha Centauri, maybe. No, how about just Chicago? This story coming from Bloomberg News by Charles Babcock. A surgeon at Chicago's Sacred Heart Hospital cut a hole in Earl Natty's throat on January 3rd, the day before he died. It's not clear why. The medical file contained no explanation of the need for the procedure called a tracheotomy, according to a state and federal inspection report that quotes Sacred Heart's, no kidding, Sacred Heart Hospital's chief nursing officer as saying it happened out of the blue. Tracheotomies, Mr. Babcock writes, are typically used to open an air passage directly to the windpipe for patients who can't breathe otherwise. Well, it turns out there was a little tracheotomy problem at Sacred Heart for-profit hospital. Earl Natty had a daughter. Her name's Antoinette Hayes. And she said, "My daddy said they're killing me," regarding how he was being treated at the Sacred Heart for-profit hospital. The FBI moved in. Remember the FBI? Once in a while, they do things that are actually good. This is one of them. The FBI moved in and surreptitiously recorded various people in order to build a case. And the case suggests that the pulmonologist at Sacred Heart deliberately kept patients too sedated to be able to breathe on their own, and then turned around and ordered a tracheotomy on the patient, enabling the for-profit hospital to bring in as much as $160,000 in Medicare and Medicaid billing per case. They did this to Medicare and Medicaid patients. Former federal healthcare fraud prosecutor Ryan Stumphauser reviewed the affidavit relating to this story. He said, you know, a typical indictment might allege phantom billing or improper coding. This complaint alleges the hospital and doctors were performing unnecessary invasive surgery to justify false billing. Edward Novak is the owner of Sacred Heart for-profit hospital. And he, his chief financial officer, and five physicians have all been charged with Medicare fraud. Allegations including that they gave or received kickbacks in return for patient referrals. They were secretly taped talking with other hospital staff about this scheme. Novak is alleged to have said that tracheotomies are our biggest moneymaker. Because, you know, we've got America has the best health care system in the world. And it's because of the profit motive. That's what gives us the greatest health care in the world, the need to make a buck on people's suffering. And so what if he didn't need a tracheotomy? Now he's got an extra hole there. Between early 2010 and January this past, Sacred Heart surgeons performed 28 Medicare tracheotomies. Of the patients upon whom they were done, 5 of them died within 2 weeks. That is 3 times the statewide death rate, post-surgery death rate in Illinois. Also in the affidavit, a statement that a nursing supervisor claimed the pulmonologist at the hospital directed an intensive care unit nurse to, quote, snow the patient. That phrase means that the patient should be so heavily sedated that only the whites of their eyes were visible. This pulmonologist is the chair of the Sacred Heart Hospital, for-profit hospital, critical care committee. If you happen to be in the Chicago area, don't let anybody take you to Sacred Heart for-profit hospital. Let's see. Patient number 8 was admitted November 2012 and given a tracheotomy on November 2017. Was admitted in November 2012 and given a tracheotomy on November the 17th. By the end of the month, he had contracted an infection that was recorded as being acquired in the hospital. He died December 1st. The hospital blamed end-stage liver disease. Earl Natty died at 76 years old on January the 4th after a tracheotomy the previous day. They're killing for money in the for-profit healthcare system. Jesus, there it is. From the Susan B. Anthony list. You know these right-wing asshats have appropriated Susan B. Anthony for an anti-abortion organization. Yeah. House moves to protect women unborn with late-term abortion ban. Pain-capable unborn child protection act will stop future hazes of horror. H.R. 1797, the Pain-Capable Unborn Child Protection Act, was passed by the House today. Hopefully, it will die an ignominious death in the Senate. These freaks are out there crowing. contact Jameson Cunningham, Shirley and Bannister Public Affairs. How about that? A guy. Charming, huh? Hey, thanks, Lib in South Carolina, getting us started this evening. It's much appreciated. We now need to raise only $245 for the evening. The lines are open. Jump right in if you want to. 304-658-3333. Or you can always reach via the Skype line, Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. Bob Kincaid Horn. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, good evening there, Bob.
Well, howdy do.
Sergi.
Yeah, what's up, Sergi?
Well, the reason I'm calling in is because representing Burgess before 2010, I had the pleasure of being in his district.
Oh, lucky you.
The simple pleasure of having this dude go. And okay, first off, I want to talk about, I'm jumping ahead of myself. First, I want to talk about the shape of the district. Okay, now, we've all heard tales of, not tales, but, you know, stories, real stories of gerrymandered districts and how they can be wildly shaped. Well, imagine for a moment Tarrant County, which is an urban county. The city of Fort Worth is deep blue, but Fort Worth's suburbs are some of the reddest cities in the nation. Just north of here is a red suburban slash rural county called Denton County. District 26 here in Texas is this district, and prior to 2010, a big sliver of inner city Fort Worth, including Morningside District, where I'm located, was in District 26. And when I say big, it wasn't big, but it was big enough to include hundreds of thousands of inner city Fort Worthians. And these blue areas of the city had this little, like, line going up just through the middle of town. Then it kind of expanded to include the northeast side. And then every single suburb in the northeastern part of the county, which is the biggest suburban area, and half of Denton County. It was a classic example of diluting urban Democratic voters, and that's how it became a red district in the first place. Me and a lot of people had the very unfortunate pleasure of him doing tours around here. He was a shoe-in every election because of the way the district was shaped. But he would go around just saying some of the wackiest stuff about the environment, about abortion, about pretty much every topic you can imagine. And I am so glad that subsequent, after 2010, when Texas gained a couple more districts, the state decided to, you know what, let's go ahead and push District 26 up there into the suburbs, and let's leave it there, and let's go ahead and put District 33 here in the core of the city. So now there's a Democrat, and I am so glad I don't have to see his mug anymore.
Oh, lucky you.
Oh, yeah, he was wacky. And as I said, I called in mainly.
Well, I think you may have the wrong verb tense there, Sergi. He is wacky. Well, he's wacky, and he's also wicked. Let's not forget wicked.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. I've accidentally used the past tense there. But, yes, represent Burgess. He used to be my representative here in District, used to be District 26. Now it's District 33, and I'm just so glad to be rid of him.
You should be. But, you know, pity the poor, well, and being as they're right-wingers, they're, pity the poor fools who still have it. I mean, really? Oh, really? Masturbating fetuses, Sergi? I mean, I keep thinking, you know, I've heard it all now. And then it turns out, nope, there's still plenty left out there.
We've never heard it all with these tidy righties running around here. And the thing that just gets me, it sickens me whenever I hear them talk about abortion. Talking abortion like it's just the greatest humanitarian crisis in the history of the world. It's like, okay, if you're going to be that obsessive about abortion and, oh, we got to protect the fetuses, whatever happened to caring about people once they're born?
Yeah, see, they are absolutely no good whatsoever at that, Sergi.
It's like after the baby is born, and then all the way up to when the person croaks, they're not concerned at all. Healthcare? No. Food stamps? No. They don't want anything to actually help people that are out of the womb, but by golly, we got to protect them when they're in there, don't we?
Get absolutely worked up.
And Who was it that said about, this was back in the years of our lovely previous president, worse than the current one, obviously, that said that George W. Bush will protect your unborn fetus and then send them off to war or something like that. I remember somebody said that and it caused this really big hubbub and it was some celebrity just speaking a bunch of truth there, but that's pretty much the truth. That's the Republican modus operandi. Care about the fetus, and then who knows? You know.
Yeah, exactly.
But anyway, as far as another thing I want to make before the, I don't want to take up too much time here, but another thing I want to mention is, and this is kind of fits into the Titanic Tuesday theme, I'd say. One thing that we as progressives have to remember is that obviously not nearly as many wacky people on our side as there are on the other side of the aisle, but you know, we got to remember, we've got some real stinkers on our side, too. And I got into a little, I guess what's the proper term, argument, spat, debate, whatever you want to call it,
sure.
Mudslinging match, with a local progressive here on the Channel 8 website, of all places. You know, I really should learn to avoid comments sections, but it just hurts so good.
Yeah, I know. You tell yourself, listen, ain't nothing going to come good of walking off into the swamp. But sometimes you got to just put the hip waders on and go. Now, I understand it's a compulsion.
The background is about a week or two ago, a bunch of LGBT activists were in the Dallas City Council chambers, and they've been like for a few months now, probably about more than a few months, maybe about a year, they've been trying to convince the Dallas City Council and Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings fun fact, Mike Rawlings, the former CEO of Pizza Hut, is now the mayor of Dallas. Ain't that just lovely? But moving on, they've been trying to get on to pass this equality resolution, which basically says, you know, we're in support of equality, da 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 da. Council member Dwayne Carraway, who is basically the leading African American leader in Dallas County, was on the floor and he was talking about the resolution and they were shouting at him, shouting them down, and just he couldn't get a word out edgewise. And if I recall correctly, the Dallas cops had to get him to leave the chambers. And I went into the comments section. It was fresh off the presses at the time. I went to the comments section on the Channel 8 website and just said, and this is something, this is a big thing for me. Okay. I don't mind, and I'm perfectly in favor of people wanting, you know, equality. However, and this is from personal experience, you can't sit up here and call the kettle black when you're the pot. Because I've noticed that among the local LGBT community here in North Texas, racism is more rampant among them than it is among the conservatives here. That's crazy to visualize, but I'm speaking from personal experience, and it's the truth.
I don't doubt it.
It's like speaking as a black person, and a black person who, you know, likes, you know, who bats for his own team, so to speak, I can personally speak to the fact that among the local LGBT population, there's a lot of racism, more so than the local right wing, and...
But that has ever been the case, has it not?
I would say if it's still an issue in 2013, it has always been an issue because, you know,
And I guess I'm saying it's also not just localized to where you are searching. There have always been deep and ugly, at least based on things I remember hearing back during Peter Godbold's Strictly Confidential program that was so brilliant for a while there with us. That there have always been really ugly and deep racial divides as far as gay folk are concerned. And it just goes to show us that racism is, in fact, pervasive. It defines this country to this day.
And I can personally attest to that because, first off, I'll just go ahead and start with the biggest elephant in the room is that no matter how you try to paint it as just a preference, if you don't give someone a chance as a person in your life based off the color of their skin, that's racist. That's just the long and short of it. If you say, well, this person's friendly and all, but I don't want to date him because he's black. It just blows my mind how people try to argue how that's not racist. You're not giving someone a chance in your life, okay, because of the color of their skin. It's the classic textbook prejudice right there. You're prejudging them. And yet I have gotten attacked, literally attacked, not just verbally, literally attacked.
Physically.
For speaking that simple truth. It's like if you're going to up here and, you bat for your own team and you're talking about equality and you talk about civil rights and the whole nine yards, and then you turn around and refuse to date certain races because of the color of their skin, because I've heard it's even worse for Asian people, even worse than for black people. And it's like, that's hypocritical and it's racist. And I've literally gotten attacked for saying that.
Damn.
Nonetheless, I will continue to say it. And, my comment was just to the extent of, I'm all in favor of equality, but get your own house in order before you start talking about civil rights and before you start talking about all that. I mean, it's like, you can't sit up here and talk about equality while you're practicing another form of discrimination in your own. It's about not being hypocritical, and I got into a big spat as on Facebook for all to see. It's just, I don't even know how to verbalize it. I really don't. I'm sick of the hypocrisy from the right, but I'm also sick of a lot of the hypocrisy we have here on the left. These are so-called progressives who have a form of racism they're trying to make an excuse for. And while the wackiness is not nearly as bad on the left as it is on the right, it's just something that I do feel needed to be brought up, and that's the second reason I called today. It just sickens me.
I'm glad you did. I'm glad you did.
I have literally been attacked for speaking out against. It's just like, I'll criticize the right all day long, but I'm not afraid to criticize the wrong that too.
Well, and there are other examples of that, and I'm not gonna deal with it right now. But there's a streak that runs through progressives that's kind of we can get a little creepy sometimes, and it's not just the topic you brought up. Sometimes we develop our own fascinations with doctrine and dogma that we will hang on to as tenaciously, as bulldoggedly as any right winger.
Yes, I can definitely definitely know about that. And one final part of this point. A lot of people say, well, what about your fellow black people? And if I had, and British Modern Black, I had an actual Oreo cookie for each and every time I've been called an Oreo.
Oh God!
I'd be able to ship. Yeah, I would be able to ship them off to a third world country and give them all diabetes. It's like, I mean, whatever happened to, it's like, I'm, you know, black, and I've made mistakes in my life, but I, you know, I'm trying to better myself, and I try to, you know, be very learned, and, you know, expand my mind, and, you know, speak like I got half a brain, and it's racism from other races and from my own. You know, it's a form of racism for, you know, one black person to say you're not black enough because, you know, you're not following the crap that passes for mainstream culture, you know, amongst your race. It's not just, you know, white culture here in America that's become horrendous. Black culture has in its own form as well. It's called ghetto. It's like racism is very pervasive on both the right and the left, and
right. Well, that's my whole point, Sergi, is that it winds up being defining, definitional, for the nature of the American character. No matter how many flags the right wing wants to wave, and I remember Tony Snow before he shuffled off to hell. Remember him? It was a flack for the Bush administration and one of those Fox creeps.
Yeah,
I remember him declaring that racism is essentially over.
Where?
Yeah, well, I mean, in America.
It's like, you know, I guess that flew over my head when he said that, but I just like, what, did he step out of time machine from 300? Can I borrow that?
Yeah, right, exactly. Hey, Sergi, good to hear from you, my friend.
Thank you for taking the call, Bob. Sorry if I kind of rambled.
No. Exactly, no apologies necessary. I didn't perceive any rambling in there.
Yeah, I didn't know how to word my points exactly, but, you know, I just tried to the best I could. My overall point, just, you know, we gotta call out the crap where we see it. We can't let ourselves be fooled into thinking us progressive ain't got crap on our side too. That's basically my overall point after Mr. Burgess. And thank you for taking my call, and I hope you have a good evening.
Gonna try. You take care, Sergi.
You too, Bob.
All right, bye now. Calling from the greater Fort Worth area, that's our buddy Sergi. Let's take a break. Plenty of stuff to go into in the remaining 2 hours. Plenty of room for conversation too if you want to jump in. 304-658-3333 is the number. And Bob Kincaid Horn on the Skype line. Either way is fine by me. So is email, bobkincaid@gmail.com. We are $20 along the road toward trying to raise $265 this evening, and any help is much appreciated. This is the Horn.
Sleepy little babe,
go to sleep, you little babe.
Your mama's gone away and your dad's gonna stay. Don't leave nobody but the babe. Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep, you little babe.
Go to sleep.
Everybody's gone in the cotton and the corn. Didn't leave nobody but the babe. Your sweet little babe.
Your sweet little babe.
Your sweet little babe.
Your sweet little babe.
Honey in the rock and the sugar don't stop. Gonna bring a bottle to the babe. Don't you weep, pretty babe.
Don't you weep, pretty babe.
Don't you weep, pretty babe.
Don't you weep, pretty babe.
She's long gone with the red shoes on. Gonna need another loving babe. Go to sleep, little babe.
Go to sleep, little babe.
Go to sleep, little babe.
Go to sleep.
You and me and the devil makes three. Don't need no other loving, babe. Go to sleep, little.
sleepy little bee.
Go to sleep, little bee.
Come lay your bones on the alabaster stones and be my ill-loving bee.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Make our way through hour number two of this Titanic Tuesday. Here, let's just put a bow on this whole mess. You know, representing Jim Bridenstine of Oklahoma Stan is kind of a newbie. He is a freshman member of the House of Representatives. And, well, let's just say this is a big fail for the IQ test that was his election in his district in Oklahoma. Yeah, the voters there, having sent him to Congress, apparently registering a collective IQ of about roughly of the freezing. And to be fair, we'll say freezing Fahrenheit, you know, 32. Jim Bridenstine got up to speak for the little fetuses today in that fetal pain bill debate in the House. Yeah, here you go.
Incapable Unborn Child Protection Act. In a report commissioned by the Department of Justice, Dr. Anand, a fetal pain expert, wrote, "It is my opinion that the human fetus possesses the ability to experience pain from 20 weeks of gestation, and the pain perceived by the fetus is possibly more intense than that perceived by term newborns or older children," unquote. The reality of Dr. Anand's statement is...
Oh, my God. He would actually have that debate. You know, like, say, between little Ashlyn at 4 months old and... He thinks the fetus feels more pain.
Seen in the fact that surgeons routinely administer anesthesia to unborn children before performing neonatal surgery. The truth is that at 20 weeks, these unborn children feel every bit of pain inflicted on them in the name of choice and in the name of convenience. Mr.
Convenience, you know, because what could possibly be more convenient than an abortion? You know, it's just like going to McDonald's, right? Just in, out, taken care of, goodbye. Only it's not. This guy's a real Lulu.
Mr. Speaker, what we do with this knowledge says a lot about us. If we turn a blind eye to the agony and suffering of our most vulnerable, can we say that we are still a nation who pursues life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness?
Had to work in a little, telegraph a little code out to the teabaggers there, you know, from the Declaration of Independence. Now, what do you reckon, what with him being from Oklahoma Stan and all, what do you reckon the outcome would be if we were to go a knocking on his door with, say, you know, the AIC Act, and say, representing Bridenstine? Really is his name. Although he's quickly working his way to Bryden Frankenstein. What if we were to peck on his door and just say, by the way, representing Bridenstine, there's a whole lot of fetuses getting poisoned in the womb, and since you seem to think that, well, you're convinced that they feel pain, how do you reckon they feel when they are failing to develop properly, when their lungs don't develop right and their heart doesn't develop right, or maybe their limbs or their bladders or their kidneys because of the toxins that are coming off of mountaintop removal sites? How much pain you reckon that fetus feels representing Bridenstine? You know what the answer would be, right?
Jobs! Got to have some jobs! Got to have mountaintop removal jobs! F them fetuses!
Right? I'm not a betting man, and I don't have anything to bet with. But I wouldn't mind laying $5 on the Green Bays over that. Especially if it paid 2-1, or hell, if it paid 1-1, I'd do it. Because you know, all this fetus wrangling is only for so long as they can inconvenience women's and assault the essential civil liberties of women. To see, and this is just a reminder. There are other civil liberties out there besides whether or not the government is looking at which books you bought at Amazon. Okay? Just saying. The right to bodily integrity. See, I'm a lot more worried about what these dumb bastards are trying to do to the rights of women to control the workings of their own bodies than I am about, frankly, metadata. I'm not saying that the latter is not a problem, but I think this is a greater one. This is a much more direct infringement. Now, you want to tie those things together? I can do that. What happens when the Republicans decide that they'd like to know the name of every woman who's ever set foot inside a reproductive health care clinic? What happens one of these days when they actually manage to criminalize trying to access reproductive health care? Yeah, now that's where the two things merge and become rather nasty. But anyway, back to representing Bride and Frankenstein.
If we willingly embrace cruelty in the name of choice, then can we say with integrity that we continue to secure the blessings of liberty not only for ourselves, but for our posterity? The good news is that for those who have been affected by the pain of abortion, there is one who chose, who made a real choice, to endure pain on behalf
of all of us. No, but he's gonna. Keep looking over in the corner, hoping there's somebody. But there ain't. Yeah. I could have saved this for tomorrow, but we'll be stacked up to the ceiling with this kind of religion industry wing nuttery by then. So better to get it out of the way.
The pain of abortion. There is one who chose, who made a real choice, to endure pain on behalf of all of us, and by his stripes we are healed. Mr.
That's right. He just said that every person who has ever taken part in the intensely personal decision to either carry, to terminate a pregnancy via a legal and safe medical procedure is in need of the forgiveness of Jesus. Here's the fun part. Those taxes you pay, it's worth remembering that these guys get a federal paycheck, not a paycheck from their states. You're helping to pay for this bastard to stand on the floor of the House of Representatives and call women who have made a decision about how they will maintain the integrity of their reproductive systems sinners. Really? That's where they are. You heard it.
If we willingly embrace cruelty in the name of choice, then can we say with integrity that we continue to secure the blessings of liberty not only for ourselves, but for our posterity? The good news is that for those who have been affected by the pain of abortion, there is one who chose, who made a real choice, to endure pain on behalf of...
You got that? Who made a real choice. Because when a woman decides to deal with an unwanted pregnancy via the safe and legal means of abortion, that's not a real choice, apparently, to this benighted religious maniac. A real choice. When, in fact, if you consult the Gospels, you'll find that he was up there saying, "Father, let this cup pass by me," which is kind of a Elizabethan English Shakespearean way. "I don't want to do this, Dad." If you believe that whole thing. Of course, then again, historically, Christianity acts like Jesus was the only person who, and you know, various and sundry so-called martyrs were the only ones who were ever crucified. I do periodically like to remind folks of the 5,000 human beings who were crucified by Marcus Licinius Crassus all the way up the Appian Way to Rome following the Spartacus Rebellion. But, yeah. I'm cranky.
All of us, and by his stripes, we are healed. Mr. Speaker, as members of Congress, let us remember that even though we may not be able to hear their cries, we are not absolved from the guilt of ignoring their pain. And with that, I yield back.
The guilt of ignoring their pain. Well, I suggest representing Bride and Frankenstein, that you go and flagellate yourself for a while, or put on the little barbed wire thing around your leg, or a hair shirt like Thomas More wore. Or, get with it, boy! Yeah. Dr. John with a note, he said, "Great call from Sergi. We often collapse culture to color, but there's so much more going on there, like he points out, class, gender, where you're from, etc. Always good to hear from Sergi in the belly of the beast, North Texas, Perrin, Shudder." And Dr. John is born and raised in Texas, so he knows of which he speaks. Subject line: racism. From this morning, this from Jack in Shreveport. "This morning, C-SPAN Washington Journal took up the topic of voter fraud and voter IDs in light of the SCOTUS Arizona decision. I was watching the Twitter stream for the show." Of course, there were callers to the show and people tweeting who were all worked up by the usual right-wing talking points. But as a self-identified older black woman called in and expressed the frustration and difficulty that she and some people can have meeting ID requirements and various other impediments the Republicans try to do or put in place, I took a look at some of the tweets that passed through the stream. The name Libby in the tweets below is that of the host of the show. Let's have a look. Someone tweeted, "Libby is obviously intimidated by blacks." TJ or what tweeted, "So, if a caller tells the host they're your favorite, you can rant on and on, bull forever. Yes, Libby is obviously intimidated by blacks." From the tweet stream. At C-SPAN WJ, "Okay, we got the race rant taken care of." You know, there are other forms of racism besides the overt stuff. There's the racism by dismissal. "Oh, let's try another. Your at C-SPAN WJ, your vote is precious. It must be protected. This strike down is exactly why so much fraud is prevalent. Yeah, what are they going to do? The right wing must feel right betrayed by Fat Tony Scalia. At C-SPAN WJ. Of course, the best way to keep non-citizens from voting is to stop them at the Mexican border with a tall, sturdy fence. Caramba! Then this. Why can't people of color use their IDs that they get to get beanies from the government to show their citizens to vote? That's T-H-E-I-R. What? That they use to get beanies from the government. Oh, bennies. You know, all that free stuff. You know, those well-paid. Yeah, we had that story. Finally, this. What BS? Libby, stop this BS and stop letting blacks intimidate you. And then that Liz Smith character from earlier said, sickening is what it was. Libby needs off the air if she can't stop these racist callers from ranting, from rattling on and on. Because, you know, talking about how you'd like to be able to vote without having to try to sign your name on a piece of wax paper with a ballpoint pen or read a Chinese restaurant menu in the original Mandarin, you know, that's just racism. Reverse racism is what it is. And just as I had put forward that little query last night about the size of government, I've turned the Rubik's cube over to an oblique angle. Again, with this voting issue. And it's just a thought experiment. What happens if a whole bunch, if the people who live here but are not documented as citizens, what happens if they vote? I'm not asking that rhetorically. I'm serious. What would happen to us if they vote? What is the fear here? Because what, it would sway the balance of power in states with high numbers of undocumented immigrants? Is the right wing afraid that they're going to vote themselves some people who, I mean, they gerrymander districts all the time. Are they saying that more voters would mean that they might eventually not be able to gerrymander their way into a majority? Is that what it's about? Just trying to sort this out, trying to make some degree of sense of it. What would they do? Vote themselves citizenship? Would they vote for? I see. They might vote some of their own into office, and that'd be terrible. But I'm a weirdo. I want to repeal the 22nd Amendment, and I want to double the size of the House and Senate. Move toward democracy, not away from it. Are the right wingers afraid that undocumented immigrants might vote to impose more taxes, so that maybe public parks could open up again and garbage collection could be recommenced? It boils down to the fact that the right wing knows that the more people vote, the less likely it is that they're going to be able to control the government. and right-wing control of government is a direct manifestation of the racism that is inherent in the Republican Party. Because they know better what's good for us. And they sure know better what's good for people who are working at sub-minimum wage with no benefits, no health care, nothing. And they are going to preserve their power, and they are going to preserve their privilege at all costs, even the cost of the viability of this once great nation. You'll notice I didn't call us a democracy. Right. Yeah. I think it's worth considering. What are they afraid of? Oh, and thank you very kindly for kicking in this evening, Michael, in Norway. Much appreciated. We are now down to trying to raise $225 for the evening. PayPal buttons at headonradionetwork.com. So, yeah, what are they afraid of? They're afraid of losing their grip on both power and privilege. And that is why back on Tuesday, the 11th, a week ago of June, Steve King, the Republican from Iowa, took to the floor to rail against immigration so-called reform efforts, which, of course, is in itself a giant charade being pursued in the Senate via Marco Rubio, who, of course, well, it's a Trojan horse. There will be no immigration reform. There will be no path to citizenship until the borders are secured. And, of course, let's understand, the borders are never going to be secured. At least not to the satisfaction of right-wing Republicans. So with the backdrop of the Senate debates, Steve King rose to address the House of Representatives on the 11th of June. And he said the following. Think of it this way. Now, this is a guy who has also compared immigrants to dogs. Yes, yes, he did that. Think of it this way. If someone goes in and robs a bank and step out on the steps of the bank with the sack of the loot and law enforcement appears and says, sorry, you can't keep the loot and we're going to put that back in the bank, but you can go. That's the equivalent of removal. You don't get to keep the objective of the crime. We put you back in the condition you were in before you committed the crime. That's not draconian. That's the minimum you can do and still have the rule of law apply. Yeah, that's right. Undocumented immigrants working for substandard wages in a country that brutalizes them, they're the same as bank robbers. Well, at least they got a promotion from dog, I guess. Then again, Steve King likes dogs. Jesus. Dr. John tweeted something last week that I found fascinating in conjunction with the immigration so-called debate, which is probably largely a sham. He sent me the website is Phenomena, Phenomena, .nationalgeographic.com. And it provides a brilliant counterpoint perspective to Steve King's notion of undocumented immigrant as bank robber. And the title of the piece, again, Phenomena, NationalGeographic.com. It says, Phenomena, Only Human. The story is by Virginia Hughes, and it's called Documenting the Undocumented. And it concerns the fascinating work being done by an archaeologist by the name of Jason De Leon. And he and his crew have gone into the wastes of the Sonoran Desert in southern Arizona. Their study area was about 55 miles south of Tucson, 40 miles north of the Mexican border. And what he's been doing as an archaeologist is to catalog the objects. Virginia Hughes writes, water bottles, diapers, knockoff Nikes, rosaries, that are slowly but surely dropped and left behind as human beings try to journey up into this here land of opportunity. I think the author's name is Tim O'Brien, wrote a Vietnam War novel called The Things They Carry. The concept reminds me of that title. Because you can learn a lot about human nature and the human experience by the artifacts that humans use. Think of a person of devout faith crossing that trackless waste, desperately trying to reach so-called civilization. And think of the exhaustion and the desperation as a cherished rosary falls from a woman's hands. Well, what it boils down to is eventually Jason De Leon discovered a body. And it's not like the more conventional archaeology that we think about, where one happens upon some ancient tomb. And there's a whole discussion to be had about the ethics of how we deal even with those. This was a person who, until fairly recently, had been a human being who died in the desert, trying to get to America so she could be one of those bank robbers that Steve King was talking about. You know, stealing America's wealth by scrubbing toilets for $3 an hour and sleeping maybe 15 to a house. They tried They did their best to put up a little memorial for the woman. They built her a shrine, De Leon's students did. And they decorated it with religious objects of adoration. They even used the tools of forensics and archaeology to find out who she was. Her name was Marisol. She was 41 years old. She was a mother of three children. She was from Ecuador. And she had been trying to get to New York to see family. And just as Representative Burgess don't much care about living four-month-olds who die horrible deaths, because once they're done being a fetus, he's not concerned. Now, Steve King doesn't much care about a 41-year-old mother of three trekking through the desert doing something that requires more courage and fortitude than Steve King will ever have in all of his entire life. But some archaeology students tried to give some degree of reverence to her memory, Marisol's memory of Marisol's brief time upon this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe. And then Jason De Leon went a step forward, and he called her family. He described it by saying, "I picked up the phone and I said, I'm the person who found Marisol. And I just wanted to let you know that we sat with her for a long time, that we waited. We sat with her before the birds could get to her. They did her more dignity than a highly paid member of the Congress of the United States is even capable of, who refers to her and people like her, male and female, adult and child, as dogs, as bank robbers. This is a brutal country." That passage across the Sonoran Desert is never easy, but we make it harder, because there are those in this country who hate Marisol, hate her for her simple desire to live, hate her because she does not willingly sit and listen to the hunger-stricken cries of her children and do nothing. That area of the world has been traversed by human beings for something going on way past 10,000 years. It's not a border. The border's artificial. It is simply the transmigration or the migratory nature of human beings. And a brutally ignorant monster like Steve King, it's not that he can't see it, it is that he refuses to see it, that he is terrified prophecy. For a fact. Let's go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
It's me again, Bobby.
Hey, Bill, what's happening?
Well, you were talking about things and the abortion issue. I had a buddy back in the 60s before the law changed, and he comes to me because he said, Bill, you know all these people. You know one, you know a doctor who does abortions. Well, my piano player was living in an apartment next door to a med student, so I talked to the med student, and he gave me a name of a guy who was, a regular OBGYN guy. And this guy did these surgeries under the name, the slang term was dusting and cleaning, D&C. So when I was married to my first wife, I was at a family gathering, and all the older women, my mother-in-law and my wife's aunts, were all talking about OBGYN guys. And the next thing name I hear is the guy that did this illegal surgery. You know, before, what was it, 71 when it became legal?
73,
okay, yeah. So, because I know it wasn't legal, and I was trying to place it because of the contact that I got was through a guy I had worked with, played piano for me on, he played for me for 30 years off and on. But, here these women were talking about what a great OBGYN guy this guy was. And because of the law, you know, what he did was totally illegal, because it's been done for as long as you go back and you read an old hard-boiled detective story, that may show up in the story, a book written in the 40s, you know.
Yeah.
And that was when it was illegal as hell, but people did it regardless, and it should be legal. Who the hell, what's with these people? Because they don't, they say, everybody knows it. They didn't give two hoots in hell after you were born, you know. But then you get, one of your callers early made me, for some reason, he popped the name into my head of a singer who worked under the name Louisiana Red. And he did a really good thing. It was one of those albums you could pick up for a buck in a drugstore. It was before I ever played in public, you know. And it was called Red's Ride. And what he chronicled was what was called in the newspapers reverse freedom rides. When people, black folk were leaving the South, black people were leaving the South to get, and coming North, you know. This guy, Louisiana Red, one of the lines from the song, it's been so long since I've heard it, but one of the lines sticks in my mind, the Citizens Committee was giving away the fare, if you don't like the South, get on away from here. But then the line that really, this was before I was really that aware of everything that was going on. This is probably 62, 63, and how old was I, 19? And he had one line about the song, and the other chorus was, I was hungry, I had to get something to eat, but when I ate my sandwich, I had to eat it on the street. And it's like, I wish people had a refresher course because that, they don't talk. My one buddy was a high school history teacher, and he's just, he fumes over what he wasn't teaching. That was true, that he was never able to teach. Because if he did, he had, there was a congressman from Lake County, Ohio, who just resigned a while ago.
Traficant?
No, he, in Traficant, they helped him resign many
years ago. Yeah, he had help.
Yeah. I don't know, he was working out of Lake. He had been a prosecutor in Lake. In fact, he had prosecuted, I don't know if you ever heard about the, down where you are, we had a cottage with a lot of land around it, or some good sized land, and there was a guy who belonged to the same group that the last Republican presidential candidate belonged to. Utah.
Yeah, Mormons.
And this guy wiped out a whole family, and The guy who became the congressman had been a prosecutor, and he nailed the guy. And that, of course, I mean, when you read the details of that mess and this guy got nailed, you had to stand up and applaud the prosecutor for, well, he had a good case. And he, because I think a guy who, you know, wipes out five or six people at one time, a whole family of them, I don't want to share the street with the guy, Bob, you know.
No.
After he's convicted. They had the evidence and got him, and there was never a whisper of unfairness in the trial or problems for the guy. I mean, the guy was, he was obviously a nutcase. But, you know, there are certain kinds of nutcases that nobody minds too much, you know. The guy with a great sense of humor or practical joker or something, that's a whole different kind of nutcase. When you strike out violently, I don't care what the reasoning is behind it, because you're just not supposed to do that, you know. I wasn't supposed to do it either, so, you know. But that, this Red's ride got to me, because I thought, yeah, how, that wasn't really that long ago. When you talk about world history, 1962-3 wasn't too long a time ago.
Not to me.
No, me neither. And the problem is that I don't know what, I won't be around to see it, and in some ways doesn't hurt me too much that, because I'm afraid of the future. I mean, I'm afraid of, I don't want to be afraid, but they say I got in a beef yesterday with some hospital executive level person, or so she said she was. God only knows on the other end of the phone, it could have been anybody, you know. I mean, in reality, you can't see them. You know, you have no concept of what they really, what they, you know what somebody, I mean, how many telephone salespeople do you get every day, or people who are experts on whatever they're trying to sell you, and they may not, they probably couldn't spell the name of the product if you ask them, you know, unless it was written in front of them. So you don't know what you're dealing with on the phone, but when I mentioned Roosevelt's name and she said, oh, you're one of them, that was like, oh, okay. Yeah, but it's just, all I can say is a lot of the stuff that we're still fighting about, they were, I mean, I remember when the law changed on abortion. Because, as I say, my buddy went, and he was able to work through one of the best OBGYN guys in the city, that if it had got out on the news that this doctor was practicing this stuff, there would have been a war. I mean, this guy would have lost his license and everything else, you know. And it was a necessary service that he had, and it's sure necessary today. And but they're still fighting against it, and I know that's another problem that I remember from the '60s was there was certain animosity that the fellow from Texas, I believe he's from, was talking about the problems with lesbians, gays, and their personal prejudices. Because everybody, every group, when it comes, push comes to shove, sometimes they'll come down on somebody else who's in the same boat they are. You know, as far as the society goes. And I don't know how you can change people's attitudes so that... that was the thing about the Vietnam era. A lot of people who were at anti-war protests, that's about as far as it went. They didn't agree on other stuff, you know. So we have to start pulling that rope in the same direction to make it work. Anyway, I'll let you go, but every once in a while you'll hit a subject that makes me think about something. I say, oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm glad it works out that way, Bill.
All right, you hang in there.
Going to try. You take care.
Yeah.
Our buddy Bill, Mr. Stress, calling from Cleveland. So we are at the top of the hour, and see how easy that is? Just dial it up, 304-658-3333. You're welcome to jump right in. And Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact name on Skype if you want to get involved. Easy, easy. This is Conversation Radio. This is the Horn. and I'm Bob Kincaid.
25 Mexicans live in the house where I was born. That's fine. Don't worry me none. I got nothing against them Mexicans. I watch them work like the work of bees, building them roads, chopping down trees, doing the job my kind won't. Sometimes they smile, most times they don't. Across the borderline, there's a dream to a better life we would see. Far from home, they have to come, make some money, and send it home. In the trailer trucks, in the minivans, pack it like a sardine in a sardine can. Oh, now, Mama, Mama, let the candles burn. In the boiling heat of a Texas sun, left to die, and her down go about a half of a mile from Mexico. You drive the truck, boy, that's the deal. You just a guy behind a wheel. Get the money all you can. Don't worry about them Mexicans. Oh, now, Mama, Mama, leave the candles burn for one day.
It's Tuesday, June 18, 2013.
All the models indicate that we must turn that trajectory downwards before 2020.
New study warns two-thirds of fossil fuel reserves must stay in the ground. Higher risk of autism linked to air pollution, again. Keystone XL pipeline won't use state-of-the-art technology. Plus,
I believe in 10 years we're going to see the fruits of all these technologies changing the world.
Ernie Moniz and the world's first solar plane may just be the antidote to cynicism.
I doubt it. All of that and more straight ahead from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
Stand by for 6 minutes of independent green news, politics, analysis, and snarky comments.
It's primarily man-made, or is it natural and cyclical?
I believe, in my view, there's no question that
major component is anthropogenic.
See, it's anthropogenic, not man-made. Republicans are so stupid. This is your Green News Report. You thought that was funny, did you?
Yeah, that was cute.
Okay. By the way, we've got some breaking news as we go to air today. The city of Los Angeles has just banned single-use plastic bags in this city where we are. And this could be notable because they say that L.A. uses 2 billion single-use plastic bags a year.
Yeah, this is a really big deal. Manufacturers managed to defeat efforts on the state level to phase out plastic bags.
Who is that? Big Bag?
Essentially, yes. They have lots and lots of lobbying money.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Big Bag loses and you win. Desi, what do you have for us today?
Well, you know, Miami is hot, but Alaska is hotter.
What?
Talkeetna, Alaska, 100 miles north of Anchorage, set an all-time temperature record of 96 degrees Fahrenheit on Monday, smashing its previous record set in June 1969. It's because a massive heat dome is stalled over Alaska, and Talkeetna was hotter than Miami, according to the National Weather Service.
But nothing to worry about.
It's too early to be sure about any fingerprint of climate change, but these are extreme swings and they are extremely curious.
It actually comes right on the heels of a record cold start to spring, as I understand it.
Yes, it does indeed. So the Australian government's official climate commission, which is tasked with studying the impact of global warming on Australia, has issued a new report saying 80% of global fossil fuel reserves must stay in the ground because burning those reserves will release enough carbon dioxide to tip the climate into dangerous territory.
All the models indicate that we must turn that trajectory downwards before 2020 and be pretty much completely decarbonized by 2050.
That's scientist and commission member Leslie Hughes of Macquarie University. That's if world governments want to keep global temperatures from rising more than 2 degrees Celsius, and the Climate Commission's calculations confirm other studies that have the same conclusion. Yet another study links air pollution exposure to autism. A new study from Harvard University's School of Public Health confirmed previous smaller studies, finding that pregnant women exposed to high levels of diesel pollution or mercury pollution from coal-fired power plants are twice as likely to have an autistic child as pregnant women living in low pollution areas. Illinois Governor Pat Quinn on Monday signed into law the nation's strictest regulations over the controversial natural gas drilling technique of fracking. But reaction is mixed. Some environmental groups criticized the legislation for being too industry-friendly, but others noted that, hey, until now, Illinois had no regulations for fracking at all. No oversight. So they're saying, eh, this is an improvement.
Yeah, low bar. When do we get to that antidote for cynicism?
Not yet. TransCanada Corporation, the owner and builder of the controversial proposed Keystone XL pipeline, says it will be the safest pipeline ever built, but Bloomberg News reports that TransCanada is not going to use state-of-the-art spill detection technology. No infrared sensors, no fiber optic cables to detect spills along the pipeline's 2,000-mile-long path from Canada. They could use them, but they won't.
Cynicism antidote yet?
Yes, here we go.
Thank you.
The 100% solar plane has landed at night, and it's on display for the public at Washington, D.C.'s Dulles Airport in preparation for its final leg to New York City. And it uses nothing but energy from the sun and batteries. Remember, it can fly at night.
How does it fly at night if it's a solar plane?
Because it uses batteries.
Which are powered by the sun?
Right.
Oh. I'm less cynical already.
This solar-powered plane represents a milestone not only in aviation, but also in solar power innovation, says our new U.S. Secretary of Energy physicist Ernie Moniz at a press conference to welcome the plane.
A lot of people are going to be surprised 10 years from now at where solar is, and not only in standard applications, but in applications we don't know yet because of the various types of solar technology being put forward. And again, I believe in 10 years, we're going to see the fruits of all these technologies changing the world.
For more on that and the other cynical stories we couldn't get to today, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. Remember, you can download us anytime via iTunes, Stitcher, or TuneIn Radio. Find us and like us on the Facebook and follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. We're taking off for a few days, but we'll see you next week from bradblog.com. I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your Green News Report.
Ain't no drag. Papa's got a brand new bag.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Bob.
Yeah, I gotta recut these intros one of these days. I gotta get B-Rez over here. We really are working on getting toll-free service back. It's slow going, tough sledding sometimes. And again, we are trying to raise $225 this evening. We're trying to raise $225 essentially in the next 49 minutes, or between now and tomorrow night, so that the hole won't get deep. It is about 12 minutes past the hour, hour 3 underway. If you want to get involved in the conversation, 304-658-3333 is the number by which to accomplish that goal. Or Bob Kincaid Horn on Skype. Either way, works just dandy for me. In the meantime, however, let's see, Bride and Frankenstein, goodbye. Save that for tomorrow. What the is that? Since we were talking about immigrants, I kind of like this story. Yes, I have been watching the NBA Finals. And I know, well, I'm not even that big of an NBA fan, but it's at least interesting when it gets down to two teams. San Antonio versus Miami. And a few nights back, last week as a matter of fact, Darius Rucker was scheduled to sing the national anthem at Game 3 of the NBA Finals in San Antonio. He couldn't make it. Had to bow out. So the Spurs then turned to a different option. They engaged 11-year-old Sebastian De La Cruz to sing the national anthem. And he was on America's Got Talent last year and was pretty impressive. And, of course, he did a good job. This is what he sounds like. Never mind. But being as how it was Texas, it apparently caused a sure enough, straight up, total right-wing freakout. I guess those privileged white folks got all pissy. People on social media asking, for instance, why is the illegal alien singing our Star Spangled Banner? Why? How come? And he wore this lovely mariachi suit, if that's the proper phrase. Another knuckle dragging, mouth breathing right wing goon asked, how come he's dressed like such a little Mexican? Well, his name is Sebastian De La Cruz. You know, Cruz, like Senator Cruz in Texas, the guy who looks like Joe McCarthy. But he's okay. He's a good one. Because he's really Canadian. How come that little feller's dressed like such a little Mexican? You know what? They probably made this here Mexican sing just to stay in America. God almighty, this is a hateful place, isn't it? is far more to talk about in our national security debate and our and the transactions that we put out there on social media than is even being reported upon at the moment. Do you really believe that domestic spying prevented a terrorist attack on the New York Stock Exchange? Because I don't. And I'm not one of those who just runs out there and grabs the aluminum foil and shapes it over my head every other day. One of the things is that social media, and I'm sure that there are and have been dissertations written on why people feel free to be so damn nasty because they've got the internet to hide behind. But Lord, I mean, you see an 11-year-old boy pouring his heart out into the national anthem and doing a magnificent job of it, and the first thing that comes to people's mind, some people's mind, is, or what passes for one, is to ask why he's dressed like such a Mexican. And why can't we get an American to sing our Star-Spangled Banner? Bless his heart, Mayor Julian Castro of San Antonio wrote a Facebook message of his own, and he said that Sebastian de la Cruz represents the best of our nation's future. Head coach of the Spurs, which kind of makes me want to see them win the finals, head coach of the Spurs, Greg Popovich, said that the folks who were asking why an illegal alien is singing our Star-Spangled Banner, Greg Popovich just said, you know what? Those people are idiots. And they're proud of their ignorance. True, true. And then the Spurs turned around and responded to all this wing nuttery by booking him to sing the national anthem again. And to mix sports metaphors, he knocked it right out of the park. So, in an evening that many of whose stories have left me feeling like I probably need to take a shower in bleach, I just like that story. And I hope the young man goes on to good things. Great. Question off topic, but a valid question anyway. Irish Dave asking, please remind me, was the Natural Resources Defense Council mixed up in the fracking law of the land of Lincoln, you know, Illinois? Yes. The Sierra Club and the NRDC got together and collaborated, and whatever other words you want to use, with the frackers to create a bill contrary to the wishes of the people whose lives would most directly be affected by said fracking. A little problem out there with folks thinking that they're smarter than the folks who are being run over and poisoned. Yeah. Hey, I hate to keep people waiting online. Let's go to the phones. 304-658-3333. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Yes, hello, Edward.
Well, you were talking about the kids singing the national anthem, and are you on there yet?
Yeah, I'm right here.
Oh, okay. I didn't know. I changed my phone, and I didn't know whether you were still there. Anyway, all this thing about Mexican people being stupid and dumb and lazy and all that. Well, I have a dear friend who's Mexican. He was born and raised down in very south Texas, clear down almost in Mexico. In fact, it's farther south than Florida. And he worked for as a flight attendant for an airline, and he was flown to a lot of the Spanish-speaking countries because he was fluent in both English and Spanish. And then he told me one time, we used to have dinner with he and his partner, and they had dinner with us and everything. They only lived three blocks away. And so he said, well, I learned Portuguese, too. I said, really? He said, oh, yeah, Portuguese is easy. It's very similar to Spanish. And then the airline he worked for opened up a route from Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport to Tokyo, but you had to speak Japanese. So they asked my friend if he would like to learn Japanese, and so they sent him to school, and he learned to speak Japanese. Now, this is this Mexican fella that speaks English, Spanish, Portuguese, and Japanese. Don't tell me that these people are...
Yeah, somebody needs to send a memo to Jason Richwine.
Oh, please. I can barely speak English. Oh, me. Well, anyway, I just want to call and tell you that.
I'm glad you did, because, well, any little lick that we can hit to sort of push back against the hate that seems to motivate these freaks is a lick we'll hit.
I did want to say one thing about the Dallas City Council. And all the yelling and hollering and people having to be, taken out by the guards and everything. The Dallas City Council is sort of like Parliament in England. There's a whole lot of screaming and hollering goes on. And in fact, a dear friend of mine was connected with the Dallas City Council for many years. He's retired now. And, I mean, that's just the way the Dallas City Council works. Just because one group gets in there and hollers and screams doesn't mean anything. And they take them out. We used to have this lady there. Her name was Elsie Faye, this black lady. And, oh, my God, we just loved Elsie Faye. She'd get in there and she'd read everybody's beads.
Is that what they call it?
Yeah. You all take care.
You too, Edward. Bye now.
Bye.
Calling from Dallas, that's our buddy, Edward. And onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob.
Yes.
It's Larry Buckhalter from Berkeley.
Hey, Larry, how you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm healing up pretty well, so I'm going to be able to get up more these days. I want to let you know that I was listening to Mike Fetter's program. He has two of them that are on Sirius.
Yeah, he does a good job.
And he did an interview with a man who actually did some really good investigative reporting, you know, the whole Don Blankenship deal.
Yeah, and the book that's out, right.
Yes, the book that was out. So I wanted to make sure that you knew that that was happening and that interview was done and that you could check into it. I'm glad that you know about it, so I really didn't need to call in. But in any case, it was good to hear Sergi. Today, I'm just hoping that I'm feeling pretty demoralized about the state of affairs in this society and in the world right now, and I'm just waiting to see when the most of us get together and decide that we're going to work in solidarity to try to change some of this stuff that's going on. I mean, to try to overturn some of this. Sort of stagnant the stagnant political climate that we're living in that seems to tolerate a lot of cronyism and also a lot of corruption. There was also a story I was listening to CBC this morning about the Montreal mayor who was finally arrested for some cronyism and organized crime that was involved in some things in the construction trades in Montreal. So it doesn't just happen here, obviously. It happens everywhere, this kind of stuff, which really sours me on politics.
It's easy to get soured, and just bear in mind when that feeling hits, Larry, that there are people out there who work every day to make sure that Americans get soured on politics, so that because one party benefits more than the other when people do not participate.
Okay. I'll have to take that into consideration. It's just a demoralizing feeling. We're working on our things that concern us here in the state of California, and I don't have the time or the energy to get into it right now on this call, but we're trying to save our caregivers and trying to save our ability to stay independently in our own homes here in this state, and the state is trying to hand over the program to managed care insurance companies, and they're also trying the Department of Labor has said that the state has to pay overtime for our caregivers, and the state's basically said that they're not going to pay overtime, so that's going to limit some of the caregivers from working obviously more than 40 hours, which means a limit to their pay. Now, I understand, you know, that caregivers need overtime, but the caregivers don't get enough money as it is, and many of them choose to work overtime because they don't mind, you know, doing the work, and they can also get more money. But if they're limited, and if I'm forced to hire a second caregiver for the purposes, now the unions aren't going to say this, but we believe that the reason why the unions wanted the Department of Labor to institute this particular change is so that they could get more caregivers to join the unions here, and then they could get more union dues. And I'm also told that the union higher-ups, now I don't know what happens in other places, but I'm told that the union management, the people that actually run the union and speak for the rank and file, do very well financially and also have great health benefits and whatnot, but that the rank and file, you know, obviously doesn't. And there seems to be a little bit of a disconnect between what the upper, what the union officials choose to do, and having an active dialogue with their rank and file members. I don't want this to be an anti-union phone call, because I understand that we really need unions, because without the unions, the rank and file wouldn't have any benefits, and they'd be, as they are in many states, they have no rights at all. They have no, you know, they have no health benefits. They are at the mercy of the employer. Their safety, you know, all of that stuff. I understand that. But, you know, in this state, there seems to be a little bit of distrust amongst some of my colleagues about what the machinations are between the health management organization or the managed care concept or the managed care industry and the unions and the state. And I can't describe it any more clearly or succinctly than that, and I don't even know if I'm giving you a really accurate picture. But, you know, what can I say?
I understand. And it sounds like more details need to be fleshed out.
You know, my credibility is important to me, and, you know, I just don't want to be putting stuff out there. I don't want to be putting information out there that's going to persuade people or that's going to instigate people to feel certain ways or to do certain things that, I mean, credibility is really important, and I'm sure you know, because you do a wonderful show, and so does Mike, but when somebody's doing a radio program and they're trying to present a topic, I find that most of the people that have jobs on the mainstream media don't care about whether or not they're responsible. And if you're on radio, you're not you personally necessarily, but anybody who's on radio, the public gives you confer status upon you because you are on the radio, and they trust you as a communicator, and that's something that the broadcasting industry seems to have forgotten, because somebody like Glenn Beck, as you know,
Larry, they haven't forgotten it. They don't care. Okay, if we're talking about the for-profit media broadcast world, they don't care. Because the essential fact that must be remembered here is that in for-profit broadcasting, it is not about delivering, and I've said this before, and perhaps it sounds like it bears mentioning again. They are not in the business of delivering content to listeners. They are in the business of delivering listeners to advertisers.
Okay.
And the two are radically different concepts. I mean, if there was somebody out there that wanted to sponsor a program that was nothing but a 5 kilohertz tone for 3 hours, interrupted periodically by ads for Buy Gold Now or vacuum cleaners that pick up Swedish bowling balls or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know what? There'd be a 3-hour program that was nothing but a 5 kilohertz tone and advertisements.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's about, well,
you know,
it's about delivering.
And most of these people that are now on the media that come from radio, like your Rushes and your Glenn Becks and your Howard Sterns and whatnot, and you know, Don Imus, they came from Top 40 radio, where they have a formula which is supposed to attract as many people as it repels. They don't, you know, they're supposed to be, they are entertaining, they are being obnoxious in order to entertain people. So what they've done is they've just taken that rapid fire Top 40 mentality and they've turned it into talk radio. That's what they've done. So it's you know, I hope people know that the going.
Well, you know, you talk about radio. Last night, Robert in Australia confirmed for me that a shock jock in Australia got canned for alleging that the Prime Minister's partner is gay because he's a hairdresser.
Oh, boy.
Good. And then as I was preparing for the show this evening, I heard a story about some shock jocks in the U.S. who got canned, and I think rightfully so, for saying some really tawdry things about a person, a former NFL player who has amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease.
Okay. Well, I don't think I could live with myself if I were doing a radio program and the management expected me to do all that kind of stuff. I don't think that I could do it. And I doubt whether, you know, anybody who's listening on the Horn chat right now or anybody who's listening to the program could live with themselves doing that. But you know what Tom Hartman said when somebody was on his program, when somebody was sort of complaining about it, he said, it's all entertainment. That's all that they see it as. They don't care.
Yeah.
And I guess that's the same with the presenters.
Well, and they'll always hide behind that kind of stuff. You know, when Limbaugh or the Beckerhead or the life support system for a haircut, Hannity gets caught doing something awful, they say, well, you know, I'm just an entertainer.
Yeah. Well, you know, Hannity came from Santa Barbara. He was at KCSB, which is the UCSB, the University of California Santa Barbara radio station. I don't know what in fact he said, but apparently he made, and I can't verify this, so I ought not to talk about it over the air, but so this is unverified by me, but I think he made a slur against someone from the gay and lesbian community, and the next thing we know, he got a job in Atlanta. I don't know who he got in touch with, whether it was, you know, I don't know how that happened, but he came from Santa Barbara of all places, and now he's been doing this stuff. So, you know, I have to historically research it before I can talk about it any more intelligently. But there are people, you know, obviously on Pacifica Radio and obviously on the public radio as well as you and Mike Malloy and a few other people Mike Fetter and various other people that take their communicator responsibilities very seriously. So
I tried to.
I just want to let you know about the book that was written about Blankenship, and I was unaware to the extent of how horrible he actually really was and is. But I hope we got some more co-signers on the AIC Act.
We are adding them. We had a couple added in the last couple of days, and more will be coming.
Okay, great.
All right. Thank you, Larry. Have a good evening.
Thank you very much.
Bye. Uh-huh. Bye now. Just a little follow-up, because I think there is some importance to this story. Steve Gleason is a former NFL player for the New Orleans Saints, and he has amyotrophic lateral sclerosis, Lou Gehrig's disease. And he had had a piece, I guess last week, in Sports Illustrated that he wrote using eye-tracking technology for people with disabilities. What Larry says is right. This shock aspect to broadcasting, and I really, you know, we may cover some weird stories and carry on a little bit, but I've never seen my role as trying to titillate or, ooh, what's he going to say tonight? No. But these creeps on Atlanta's 790 The Zone, which is an ESPN radio affiliate, decided to go after Steve Gleason. No kidding. One of the things they did was a knock-knock joke, the punchline to which was, smother me. These guys were well paid. Because when profit is the motive driving broadcast programming decisions, then whatever sells the soap is what will draw the biggest pay. We don't have a hell of a lot here. What we have, I hope, is a little bit of integrity and a whole lot of candor. And that's why things are the way they are here. You know, trying to raise $150 a night. $150 a night wouldn't pay for 15 minutes work of these goons in Atlanta. But somehow or another, it seems more important to have a decent relationship with y'all than to constantly trying to be one-upping myself by being more outrageous. A human being has a horrible disease that is more or less slowly killing him. And in order to make a buck, some disgusting, putrid human beings decide that there's something funny about it. It is interesting, however, that will get you fired in this country, but something like what Flush Flembaugh did to Sandra Fluck won't. Steve Gleason is 36 years old, and he took to his Facebook page in the wake of this sleazy attack, and he said, "We have all made mistakes in this life. How we learn from our mistakes is the measure of who we are. I think everyone can learn from this event. It's clear to me that on a national and global scale, ALS is not understood, which is part of why it's underfunded and largely ignored." He cannot talk. He cannot move. He was able to write the piece in Sports Illustrated, again, via technology that followed, that tracked the movements of his eye. He went on and said, in the past 36 hours, lots of people have been talking. Let's talk about this. There are zero treatments for ALS. If you take any action as a result of this event, I prefer it to be action to end ALS. See what we're doing to change that. And he has an ALS organization called Team Gleason, TEAMGLEASON.org. But again, Cellini, Shapiro, and Domino thought it was funny. The host, the story I'm looking at here says, the host, mimicking Gleason, told a number of jokes and eventually asked the two others to do him a favor by smothering. Nick Cellini has since apologized. But the fact of the matter is, this kind of filth is quite in vogue in our country. Nasty, nasty business. And just to go back to the immigration issue for a moment, and perhaps get another and better idea of how vicious the white privileged right wing are in this country. A story of a little group called Sunflower Community Action in Kansas. They were upset about the ongoing vile and hateful actions of one Chris Kobach. He's the guy who wrote the Papers, Please law, a portion of which was stricken, maybe it wasn't part of the paper. Anyway, that has been before the Supreme Court. He's Secretary of State of Kansas. And Sunflower Community Action did the only thing they have available to them. They protested. About 300 of them went on the Saturday before Father's Day, last Saturday, to his neighborhood and his home. To ask him to stop spreading his hate. They suggested he either focus on his job as Secretary of State or step down. Sunflower Community Action said he has long devastated communities and wrought enormous financial costs to many states. A trail of shoes was left on his front steps to symbolize all the fatherless families due to deportations, for which he is in part responsible. The group stood in front of his house and chanted, and then peacefully dispersed. Chris Kobach wasn't even there, nor was his family. But when word reached him of what had happened, he went on Radio Rwanda, Fox News Radio, on the show hosted by Todd Starnes, to piss and moan about people objecting to his hate-filled policies. He said, "They don't have a right to enter someone's private property and engage in this kind of intimidation." And then this: "If we'd been in the home and not been armed, I would have felt very afraid, because it took the police 15 minutes to show up. It's important that we recognize there's a reason we have the Second Amendment. There are situations like this where you have a mob and you do need to be able to protect yourself. The Second Amendment is the private property owner's last resort." "My views are set, and I'm determined to do what I can to restore the rule of law. Let's obey our laws and not give amnesty to illegal aliens." Todd Starnes followed up by tweeting to his knuckle-dragging, mouth-breathing followers that he tweeted, "Lock and load, America!" This evil right-wing punk wants to start shooting at unarmed people who did precisely nothing to him except to leave him a rather visual reminder of the harm that he himself has done. Oh, and he ran behind the skirts of his daughter too. "Well, what if my little baby girl saw this?" Well, then Daddy would have to explain to his precious darling that he takes a dump on people who aren't quite as white as he is every day, every minute, every hour, every instant of his continued putrescent existence. You want to know the violent words, the hateful, terrifying words that Sunflower Community Action used? They said, "Chris Kobach, we know you can stand with us. We know you can stand with Kansas people, because Kansas people wants family unity. We want love. And we're showing it right now." Those words were enough to inspire Chris Kobach to want to murder them in cold blood. Bleeding Kansas, baby. Bleeding Kansas. Ain't nothing changed. Lock and load, America. And just to wrap things up this evening, two stories. About 10,000 people in Louisianistan lost electricity today. Why? Well, because a gas pipeline blew up. Really? An explosion, according to Reuters, an explosion at a gas line or gas plant about 80 miles north of New Orleans knocked out power to about 10,000 customers on Tuesday. That would be today. The explosion occurred in the town of Enon. According to the reports, the sheriff's office in Washington Parish said its officers and other first responders were on the scene of the explosion. They gave no details, and no details as to whether there were injuries. So let's see. Fertilizer plant, refinery, gas pipeline. Nothing wrong with our infrastructure. It's a free market, baby. The unseen hand will solve all problems, right? Because, hey, Florida Gas that owns the pipeline, I mean, they've got everybody's best interests at heart, you know, somewhere 9,000 slots down after what they've really got their thighs focused on, which, you know, making a buck, a profit. So Florida Gas cost 10,000 people their electricity today. Power's been restored. And no word as to whether the cost of the power restoration will be charged to Florida Gas or whether it'll be just another one of those parts of the socialization process of law of corporate loss that will be, simply be handed over to, you know, you, me, we the people, otherwise known as the taxpayers. Oopsie. And then finally, a little trip to Alberta and the lands of the Dene Ta First Nations people. Northern Alberta. Massive toxic waste spill there. Said to cover over 1,000 acres of ground. James Anise is chief of the Dene Ta. He said of the place where the pipeline burst, every plant and tree died where the spill happened. The Globe and Mail reporting that the leak follows a pair of other major spills in the region, including 800,000 liters of an oil-water mixture from Pace Oil and Gas Limited and nearly 3.5 million liters of oil from a pipeline run by Plains Midstream Canada. After those accidents, the Dene Ta had asked the Energy Resources Conservation Board, Alberta's energy regulator, to require installation of pressure and volume monitors as well as emergency shutoff devices on aging oil and gas infrastructure. The Apache spill has renewed calls for change. How's about the Apache spill renews calls for stop it? $9.5 million. It's about 2 million, more than 2 million gallons of salt and heavy metal-laced wastewater dumped all over the wetlands of the Dene Ta people from this Apache Corporation pipeline. Texas-based Apache Corporation pipeline, who sat on the information and didn't say a damned word about it until June the 12th. It is being referred to as one of the largest recent environmental disasters in North America. Just a little reminder here from the Peanut Gallery. If it's an environmental disaster, it's probably also a human health disaster, and it's probably also a human rights disaster. And yes, naturally, it occurs on Indian lands. Because, hey, white folks are good at ripping off and stealing Indian lands. If you're good at something, why quit, right? And these are the clowns that we're supposed to trust to get the Keystone XL pipeline right. Sorry. Not taking cards in that game. No how. No way. So keep the Dene Ta people in your thoughts. And I guess that wraps it up for this evening, this Titanic Tuesday. This was kind of a tough one, wasn't it? My apologies for anybody that I put off. Misery loves company, though, so... Well, I apologize. Thanks, everybody. Thanks to the two of you who stepped up to help out tonight. Much needed and much appreciated. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky and Betsy in the chat room. Thanks to our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and AICACT.org. Go to AICACT.org and learn what you can about our struggle for Appalachian human rights, and take action to help us get more sponsors if you feel so compelled for the AICACT. Thank you very kindly for the work you've already done and your continuing outreach. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.